I'm Alexia Ridley with Athens News Matters, a show dedicated to local news, current events, and community outreach efforts. Today, I'm joined by representatives with Envision Athens. We'll discuss the effort, goals for Athens-Clark County, and progress to date with a focus on health. That's next on Athens News Matters. Hello, I'm Alexia Ridley, host of Athens News Matters. I'm joined by my guests, Erin Barger, project manager with Envision Athens, and Professor Grace Bagwell Adams with UGA School of Public Health. So thank you both for joining me, ladies.
Thanks, Alexia.
Thanks for having us.
And I think first, let me ask you how you each kind of ended up working with Envision Athens, though Grace, I know you're at UGA, but you collaborate. Mm-hmm. So Erin, let me start with you. You're a project manager. How did you get to this point?
Great question. So I was actually working in the nonprofit sector. I've been in Athens for a decade now. And while working in a regional vice president position with a nonprofit organization, was invited to join the Citizen Steering Committee for Envision Athens when it was actually in concept stage. And throughout the end of 2016, 2017, served as a volunteer steering committee member to help guide that process. And so when the plan or action agenda was fully formed after a year-long process of community feedback, targeted analysis, and assessment, we had an action agenda of 103 priority actions to pursue, and the movement needed a project manager. And so I was invited to apply for that position and began that role in last May of 2018.
Yeah, 103 items. That's
no
daunting. Just a little daunting. And Grace, you're a professor at UGA, but you collaborate. And how did you come to work with Envision Athens?
So I've also been in Athens for quite some time. I moved here in 2007 for graduate school, and like many people, slowly became an Athenian that's chosen to stay. Mm-hmm. And so as a graduate student, got really engaged in some community work, and then took a position once I finished my graduate degree in the College of Public Health, and was working at the time with the nonprofit Community Connection in assisting them with their community health needs assessment. And fast forward a few years later, that actually became what's now known as the Athens Wellbeing Project. And what we're doing is I'm a principal investigator of that project, and we're working to collect representative household level data across many different domains, all of which overlap with the work that Envision Athens is doing. And so Envision Athens is a stakeholder and sits at the planning table for the Athens Wellbeing Project. And the Athens Wellbeing Project really just exists to complement the work that Envision is doing and to inform it and to provide meaningful data across time to really capture the progress that's being made in each of the strategic action areas. And so it's an extremely valuable partnership for both Athens Wellbeing Project and Envision, because the whole point of data, really, if it's going to be useful, is for people to put it to work. And so that's what we're hoping to do through this partnership. And I'm extremely grateful to be at the table with Envision, specifically in the area of health, because we've had so much that's changed in a short amount of time. And a lot of work that's going on in the community is really incredible. But I think that using the data to inform that work is what we need to be doing.
These are two really wide-ranging projects. There's a lot of information going for Envision Athens for the Wellbeing Project. There's really a lot of info. How do you manage each of you such kind of broad projects? We'll start with you, Grace. You can continue.
Yeah. I think it really starts with the champions of the project themselves. So for the Athens Wellbeing Project, our Athens Area Community Foundation has taken a leadership role in this community in championing the project and really getting the stakeholders of the Athens Wellbeing Project to commit to a longitudinal process to get these quality data. And so I really think it begins with that leadership and all of the partners, which include the local government, the school district, the hospital systems, United Way, Envision, the Athens Housing Authority, and others, coming together and committing to shared vision and common goals. And then really it's the research team is sort of carrying out the Athens Wellbeing Project mission, which is to get meaningful data to inform service delivery and improvements in community life and well-being. And so that's really, I think, as long as we stay focused on the collaborative aspect of the work and also the vision and the mission of getting meaningful data in the hands of our community stakeholders and community members themselves, then we stay on the right track.
Mm. So from the Envision Athens perspective, you know, both of these, one, a data collection strategy and longitudinal project, and then Envision Athens, which is a movement, are both necessarily wide in scope, but also necessarily deep, because the questions that we're asking and the problems that we're attempting to begin resolving in a different way require the best of grassroots activism and passion, as well as institutional capacity. And so I think both of these opportunities thrive because they are consistently and continuously open to the participation and feedback of everyday citizens. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, they're championed by and supported by institutions that are, you know, sustained in Athens and have their resources to help this be long term and not just, you know, overnight or a temporary fix. So we're both in it for the long haul.
That's right.
And you kicked off in 2017. You had various focus groups. Under health, what do your participants consider the priority?
The priority action for health is to develop an effective behavioral health crisis response team.
And that means people ready to handle anything that comes
great
up?
Great question. And so I think it's important to point out that it's certainly not the case that before this team came together, there was not really important and effective response occurring. What Envision Athens has helped to do is to convene people who have not necessarily shared the same space to address the crisis in which we find ourselves. So never before have these specific players come to the same table, such as St. Mary's, Piedmont Athens Regional Healthcare System, Advantage Behavioral Health, the police department, both of UGA and Athens-Clark County, the Clark County School District, the Public Defender's Office, the Sheriff's Office, and Athens-Clark County Probation. So although those groups were working together, they were not necessarily at the same table talking about the challenges that they're facing in the community, in which we know Georgia is in the bottom in the United States as far as the amount of funding for mental health. And so it was around this table that we started, one, challenging ourselves to redefine the priority action and actually changed the language from the word mental health to behavioral health. And Grace can share a little bit about why we made that change.
Yeah, that seems like a real distinction.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. The term behavioral health really is just more comprehensive than mental health. And it also allows us as a community to respond to the specific mental health needs in addition to the substance use disorder crisis that's going on. So it's no secret that we're in the midst of an opioid crisis nationwide. Athens is not immune to that. And we certainly have seen some of those indicators increasing over time that would show us evidence that we need to be really paying attention and parallel processing our response to mental health at the same time that we're talking about substance use disorder. And so this change in terminology for the Envision Athens team from mental health crisis response team to behavioral health was really an effort to get more accurate and comprehensive with the language that we use to describe the work that we're doing in order to really take into consideration, as I mentioned, both aspects, both the mental health and the substance use disorder aspect that we really need to be thinking about and working together on both of those things at the same time. Because many individuals that are experiencing substance use disorder are also experiencing other mental health illnesses or disorders. And so that comorbidity is really important to consider in the way that we do this work. And that's why it's called behavioral health.
Did you find that Athens, well, because of Georgia ranking so low, Athens is in Georgia, were we ranking fairly low when it comes to helping people in the area of behavioral health, you know, getting them to the resources that they need?
So we are in what the federal government terms a health provider shortage area in terms of the number of providers we have as a ratio to the number of clients or patients that we have. So we do need more mental health service providers in Athens-Clark County. However, we are very fortunate in Athens-Clark County specifically because we have many more service providers than other surrounding counties. And in fact, our hospital systems and our mental health and behavioral health providers actually serve a 17-county area.
Wow.
And so it's really important to understand that, yes, we have a supply shortage of clinicians and practitioners in this behavioral health area, but relative to the geographic area that we're in, many other counties, we really are the social service and behavioral health service sort of metropolis, yeah, mm-hmm. or a hub, I would say, because we have so many patients that are coming in. And so that's, you know, that's definitely something that to consider. We need more providers, but we certainly do have, we have lots of resources here.
We're certainly better off than we could be.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And UGA is no small factor in that.
That's right. UGA has a lot of resources, but we also have a lot of students here that, you know, that also have behavioral health needs. And so I think that one of the things that we've learned from the Athens Wellbeing Project data, for example, is that the households with students in them that are saying that they have behavioral health needs is actually statistically significantly higher than the general population in Athens-Clarke County. And so I think definitely with the resources that the university has, that's something to consider in contributing to, you know, battling behavioral health crises. That's important, but we also have a lot of students who have behavioral health needs as well.
And Erin, probably should have asked you this a little bit earlier, but for people who are maybe not quite familiar with Envision Athens, what is this movement? Mm-hmm. What is the work, the focus, mm-hmm. the mm-hmm. gist?
Great question. So Envision Athens is essentially the action we need to see the change we want. It's the 20-year plan for community and economic development for Athens-Clarke County. Essentially, it's a movement by and with people to help us realize our optimum potential in four key areas: equity, prosperity, compassion, and unity. And those things certainly find their own unique impact in this discussion of health, which is one of 14 domains. So probably the easiest way to sum up the categories of Envision Athens would be under the three umbrellas of people, place, and prosperity. To hone down another level in people, we have domains such as health, human services, safety, arts and culture. Under the umbrella of place, domains such as land use, agriculture, housing, environment. And then within the economic development domain, or prosperity, we have the domains of education and economic development.
And we're discussing health right now, but I'm assuming there might be some overlap in different areas. So where would health, I guess, impact or be impacted by other domains under the Envision Athens umbrella?
Great question. And so if we look at our education priority action, which relates to people being able to achieve their optimum economic mobility and engage in effective workforce development, certainly one of the challenges that the community faces is if our workforce has unmet or undertreated behavioral health challenges, then that certainly makes it challenging to have our workforce, you know, working at its optimum potential. And then if you think about the impact of mental health, behavioral health challenges among K through 12 students, and thinking about, you know, students who have had experiences that could be considered toxic stress. And it's important that the system, such as Clarke County School District, which I think it does a very good job of trying to be trauma-informed. And I think the more we can work together, kind of connecting health and education, as well as civic engagement, social services, to ensure that all of our systems are able to respond in that competent, compassionate, and collaborative manner, then we can really reach our optimum potential.
And she mentioned trauma-informed. I know you were nodding your head, Grace. What do you want people to know about being trauma-informed?
I think that it's just that our school district and other community partners are really committing to engaging in evidence-based responses to the families in our district and in our county that have had traumatic experiences, and just a general recognition of how that impacts every aspect of life. And I mean, even down to our school system, how in the classroom we can integrate approaches with educating our children that take into consideration these experiences that impact everything, including their academic performance.
And then these things have very important impact in the realm of, you know, response to behavioral challenges, both at a student school district level, and then as people move into adulthood, you have practices that are moving us from more punitive approaches to things such as restorative justice, which is finding its way into different schools. So more practices that are focused on reconciliation and addressing root causes of behavior, and making some space for the fact that we have students who have experienced real trauma. And until we help them find a way to deal with that and surround them with a circle of care in which to do so, we probably aren't making a reasonable request if we think that behavior should change, if we're not providing the supports necessary to do so. And then moving into adulthood, we have these really amazing programs such as the Treatment and Accountability Court in Athens-Clarke County, where people who have broken the law, they have the opportunity to be surrounded by some supports that will help them address whatever challenges they have.
If I could tag on to that, I think that nationwide we're seeing lots of communities really struggle with these issues, and I think try to come and approach these very complex, multi-layered problems in novel ways. And that really starts with sector alignment. I think that that starts with us bringing people to the same table who traditionally haven't really worked together or had the same vocabulary. We're seeing that with the behavioral health crisis response team. And what's really amazing is us all recognizing at that table that we need to build a common vocabulary, because the criminal justice system and the public health system and then clinicians have different terms for different things. And so I think that what we're talking about is sector alignment that allows space for us to come and sit down together and say, okay, we recognize that these are problems that we've all been trying to address sort of separately in some ways. How do we integrate what we're doing and just come up with even a common language to begin addressing root causes? And that's where I think you can see real progress happen, and where we're really seeing, I mean, as a public health person, this is really the dream, right? Where we health is connected to everything. And so I think when you address that and you really allow for these partnerships to flourish, it allows us to move forward together.
What would you say to what Erin touched on about the fact that there are students and adults who've suffered real trauma and that trauma has never been addressed, and then you're asking them to function as if it never happened? That doesn't seem to be very effective.
Right, and it's not effective, and then we expect these students to perform at the same level as someone who hasn't experienced a traumatic event or series of trauma, traumatic events in their lives. And so I think that it really requires us all to take a comprehensive approach to service provision and to wrap around not just these students but their families. And what's called, you know, a lot of the literature, a lot of the work at the state level that's being done is this two-generational approach, recognizing the family as the unit that really requires support, not just the individual student, and meeting that family where they are and making sure that they have not just what they need to thrive educationally, right, but also thinking about their physical health and things like food security and all of these other aspects that influence their educational performance and outcomes.
And Erin, recently you've had a progress report for Envision Athens. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. Well, specific to health, I'm really proud to say, proud of our community, when I say that on a scale of 1 to 4, 4 meaning the action is fully completed, and 1 meaning that it really has not fully launched, the health priority action is at a 3, which is approaching success and progress and moving in the right intended direction. And actually, if we took this action, you know, at its most superficial level, we're at a 4 because we have developed an effective behavioral health crisis response team. But Envision Athens takes very seriously not moving on from one commitment and to the next until we have actually fully address the success measures that this team defined. And so although we do have a team and it is actively meeting on a monthly basis and conversations outside that monthly meeting, we have some success measures that are going to take us a while, and we're committed to addressing those more fully. And so that is why we're at a 3 moving toward a 4.
Very cautious.
I would say cautious, and I think our communication should be and will be authentic, and it has to have a lot of integrity, because these challenges are so important to resolve by honoring the depth of the challenge and also the importance. And so we don't want to skate over any difficulty and make something seem simplistic when it's really not simple. It's actually very complex, and I think the community has to be willing to see the complexity of it and see things for what they are and address them collaboratively. So I'm really glad that that is what we're doing.
And I want to ask both of you this question, but we'll start with you first, Erin. What does success in the area of health look like for you right now under Envision Athens?
That's a great question. And so I'm looking at my work plan right now where I have about 10 different success measures listed. And by the way, if you're listening to the show and you want to know more about how we define success, it's important to note that the partners worked collaboratively to define the success measures. And so those can be found online at www.envisionathens.com. And our work plan is available for your perusal. And I welcome your questions and comments. And so a lot of the success measures relate to reducing either the number of incidents or the amount of time that people in behavioral health crises are interacting with institutions. And institutions can mean jail. Often it can also mean the emergency departments of hospitals. And so, you know, we know that part of our history in serving people with mental and behavioral health challenges is at one point folks were institutionalized. And, you know, we had this facility in Milledgeville that shut down, and I am certainly in no way suggesting that is something we should bring back. But it is an unfortunate reality that we have moved from one type of institutionalization to now having people whose needs remain unmet, and they unfortunately continue to interact institutionally in ways that are still not productive. So while I'm sure we have taken many steps forward, and I don't want to insinuate that we haven't, we have a long way to go when we still see the number of people that we see in this community being booked into jail and then taken to emergency departments for things that are sometimes directly related to factors beyond their control. Now, clearly, just to clarify, you know, if someone is threatening self-harm, harm to others, we absolutely agree that there is a time and a place for law enforcement. And so that's why it's important that the police department is at this conversation table. But what's so important about this is sometimes we have incidents where there is some interpretation required. And so it's really key to have something like a co-response model, which we now have in Athens-Clarke County, where we have a special officer who's trained in crisis response, literally responding to incidents with a trained clinician, partnering with Advantage Behavioral Health Services so they can co-respond.
I just want to let those who may have joined us late know that I am speaking with Erin Barger, who's project manager with Envision Athens, and Professor Grace Bagwell Adams, who's with UGA School of Public Health. And we're discussing issues today pertaining to health in the Athens-Clarke County community as relates to Envision Athens and the Wellbeing Project. And Grace, I want to ask you the same question. What does success in the area of health look like for you?
I think that's a great question. It's a complex question, so I'm going to answer it in a few different parts, and I'm sure we'll leave some stones that have not been turned over. But I'll say that, first of all, one of the things that we found out from the Athens Wellbeing Project data is that 1 in 4 households in this community have someone in the household who needed mental health treatment in the last year and wasn't able to get it. And so I think that when we talk about success, the first layer really is about healthcare access. And the Behavioral Health Crisis Response Team focuses on these downstream, so the very worst case scenario, I think, mm-hmm. when we see mental and behavioral health go untreated, this is what's happening. So we have to have this crisis response team in place. But for me, success also looks like us really working at the same time to get some work done upstream and really open up access to behavioral health providers and get people to the providers that they need in order to treat them before they get to the point where they've experienced a health crisis or a behavioral health crisis. What we also know from our AWP data is that the biggest reason that people aren't getting the treatment they need is about health insurance coverage and it being and mental health treatment being affordable. And so I think that really working collaboratively to address that aspect. And then the second most common reason that people don't get the treatment they need is stigma. And so I think that those are some very specific and immediate things that can be worked on, is, you know, really the affordability of treatment and then reducing the stigma of accessing behavioral health treatment. So what success looks like, really, first layer is opening up access, getting more people into treatment earlier, not just the people who are experiencing crisis, but their family members. Again, this wraparound approach. When a person has a behavioral health disorder or a behavioral health problem, it affects the whole family unit. It doesn't just affect the individual. And so we really need to recognize that and be talking about that, because it is so critical to you know, acknowledge all aspects of how this these disorders and these diseases affect the family. I think that in the short term, success would look like health utilization going up, because if access gets opened, then we've got more people going to more providers more often, more frequently. And behavioral health really requires ongoing treatment. This is not us going in once a year for a checkup like we do with our primary care provider. What this looks like is consistent interaction with clinicians who are trained to deal with these kinds of issues. And so I think that that's really important to think about as the health utilization aspect. And then, of course, downstream, the health outcomes getting better, right? So incidence and prevalence of disease actually changing. And if we're talking about substance use disorder, for example, we would see fewer people being diagnosed, fewer people who are misusing or abusing substances. And then for those who already have a diagnosed substance use disorder, them getting access to consistent treatment. And so those are, again, that's a complex answer. It's very complex. So I think we have to look at different aspects. But I don't think success overnight or even 5 or 10 years from now looks like this problem, quote unquote, going away. I think what it looks like is us talking more honestly about the prevalence and the breadth and the depth of behavioral health in our community, and the need for treatment and the need to reduce stigma. And that's really what we should be focusing on.
And it seems remembering people don't live in a vacuum.
That's
that
right.
You live in a family, you mm-hmm. live in a community, and it does have impacts that affect more than just mm-hmm. the individual.
That's right.
Very good.
And there are two ways to view that, right? So if you think about the impact being exponential, if left untreated, the negative impact is generational and exponential, that it impacts the person's entire family, social network, workplace, neighborhood, community. And then if we can do what Grace mentioned, increase access to care, reduce stigma, over time reduce prevalence of substance abuse, the same holds true. Mm-hmm. Thankfully, you know, if we can work to address this, then the positive impact is also exponential.
So that's helpful. If we address it, there is, you know, there's a bright spot.
That's right.
Absolutely.
Right.
Well, I would like to highlight just a couple of the things that have come out of this Healthy Athens discussion. One key component is that Advantage Behavioral Health Systems actually reopened their crisis stabilization unit. And that is an important resource for this community. Advantage had done a great job of opening that initially and then had some construction plumbing issues. And so we had lost some literal beds, which that was pressing on the community, the under-resourced nature of that, which was completely beyond anyone's control. But as of January of this year, we've gone from 14 crisis beds up to 30. And then they also have a temporary observation unit that was non-existent. They now have 8 beds for that. So that's just an important resource for the community to know about. And then another thing that we're doing to reduce that stigma is hosting community-based training so that people who work in the community, and we're talking about people that drive buses or run shops downtown or elsewhere, people that work at libraries and local YMCAs, housing authorities, can come and be trained about how to respond effectively to people in crisis.
Well, we are out of time. We will end it there. So I do want to thank my guests, Aaron Barger and Professor Grace Bagwell Adams. To hear this show again, visit WUGA.org for a podcast. For questions or comments, visit our Facebook page. This show does not reflect the views of the station. Athens News Matters is a production of WUGA, a broadcast service of the University of Georgia. I'm Alexia Ridley.